The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab.
Yeah, but what show number is it?
The 200th show.
The 27th April, 2009. Congratulations, John and Dave.
Congratulations.
And welcome to Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 200. Hi, John.
That's what I thought it was, the Pete clan there.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That was, Pete's two oldest. Oh, well, Pete's taking care of that. That's right. Yeah. What show is that? Okay, so for those of you listening for the first time right now, this is a show that we recorded, that John and I decided to do live. It was actually Pete's idea, so blame him. And we've got a bunch of people up on TalkShoe here right now. I'm not sure exactly how many, but it's lots.
52.
All right, good. And so we're going to be taking questions from some of them. We'll try and do this as normally as possible. Or at least we're going to do this with the thought that it will be listened to by more people that are not on the live show. But of course, we want to have lots of interaction because we are celebrating here.
Now, you did hit the record button. I just want to make sure, because we've had that happen maybe in one episode. And I know we're not the only podcasters who forget to hit the record button and talk for 10 or 20 or 30 minutes through the whole show.
It's happened.
So anyways.
No, it looks good. I think we're all right here. And in theory, the audio will allow us to pull in the folks from TalkShoe just like we always do.
Now, I'm curious. Now, I'm looking at this app. So first, I'm very glad that this TalkShoe app, which you asked me to install, appears to be a Java-based app, which is great because I'm running it on my G5. But the nice thing about Java is that it runs on pretty much anything.
That's the only thing I'm seeing about Java.
The only thing I'm seeing is, and this is my little finger wag at Java, is that the UI is a little funky. Like the text in my window here, chat window, is clipped on the bottom and on the right a little bit. And that's the one thing that I've noticed about Java UIs, is that they some implementations don't get it quite right. But it's certainly functional. It seems to be working, and I'm seeing everybody typing in and stuff, including people on G5s. Cool.
Yeah, there you go. That's right. Okay, so we're having some audio things. There's actually nothing I can do about John's audio to TalkShoe because that's all happening direct via Skype. I hear John just fine, so
I can turn my gain up a little bit.
Yeah, you go ahead and do that. I can always readjust you here.
All right. I turned up just a tad.
Okay. Yeah, you're not breaking up for me. Although you know, and it might be because we're on TalkShoe, but that might be compromising your audio quality slightly, John. It is what it is.
Is this a roast here? I'm looking at some of these comments.
They're trying to screw us up. Okay. You know what? Let's start with a question in the room. Do we have a question from our AAC conversion guru, Michael Johnston. So we're gonna dive right in. We are live. Oh, get this, John. You're going to love this. We are live on the net, right? Not live without a net. We're live on the net. Get that? Get the play on words? Anyway, we better go to Michael.
No.
Hi, Michael.
He's live.
Hello, Dave.
How are you, sir?
Yes.
I'm all right. How are you?
We're doing well. So I've got to ride the gain here because I have one volume knob that's for John and Michael. So go ahead, Michael, you said you had a question about Wi-Fi, is that right?
Yes, I do. So I just moved into a new office space for iPhone LE, and we have Wi-Fi here. It's a Linksys 802.11n router, and of course I have a MacBook Pro with N in there. And so I connect to that, and he's got Comcast here, and it's really fast, and I think, I don't know, maybe 20 kbps down. But when I connect over 802.11n, I get maybe 1 or 2 kbps down, and it's very intermittent in its speed and quality, and the connection drops, and I have to hit refresh a lot. So I tried, you know, I thought maybe the because Ed Kirk connected with his MacBook Pro on G worked fine. And so I thought maybe it's an NSPEC problem on this router. So I upgraded the firmware. It was out of date. Thought that would fix it, but it didn't. So I set it to G-only mode, and now my speed is, you know, just about as much as G can offer. But on 802.11n, it's not working well.
Okay. I think I've seen this same problem before with two different routers and two different laptops, but both were owned by Jeff Quistad, who is one of our Austin-based reps for Backbeat Media. What vintage is your MacBook Pro, Michael?
It's the newest MacBook Pro.
All right. Well, that screws my theory that there was a bad. Well, and it may be the same theory that there's a strange patch. Go ahead, John.
What's the base again?
What's the what, John?
The base station.
It's a Linksys.
Okay.
802.11n router. I can pull up the model number in just a second here, but I will mention also that I use my Airport Extreme at home with 802.11n mode only, and it works just fine. So, if that helps at all,
yeah.
For the record, where I saw this problem with Jeff, it was happening on a Time Capsule, which obviously is Apple hardware, and which was at our office, and then also on his some Belkin, you know, N-based router that he had at home. And we narrowed it down to this machine didn't want to talk happily over N. Now, it seems strange when it was a second machine that he had, and now a machine that... It, you know, that's yours. Now, I'm assuming that this is, yeah, so somebody on the show asked if there were two radios or one. Is it just a single, is it 2.4 gigahertz N, Michael, or is it 5 gigahertz N?
I think there's a setting to change that, right?
And it, so not I think I have... necessarily. Okay.
Okay. I'm looking and I think it's the 2.4 gigahertz.
That makes sense. That's what we had going on down in Austin, too.
Because we discussed that. The Apple unit, I think if you hold down the right key, will let you pick the frequency range for the N stuff.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm thinking, now we commented on this before. I mean, N is supposedly a draft standard, and it sounds, I'm wondering if it's an interoperability issue. The other thing I was thinking is to get something like iStumbler and just kind of snoop around and just make sure you're on a good channel and you're not running into anybody else is always, I think, a good recommendation. Get some sort of sniffer. Again, iStumbler is good for Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and some other things, and just survey the neighborhood. Though, I don't know, I'm leaning towards a compatibility issue. You know, it's just, again, it's a draft standard. Maybe it just, either, or as you suggested, Dave, the frequency. Maybe there's a lot of garbage in one frequency and you should try the other.
Yeah.
Well, but with Ed using an 802.11g MacBook Pro at the same time as I was, he was getting no problems at all.
Right. So if you've got people on 2.4, you can't change the frequency to 5 without cutting them out, even if the radio would support it. And my guess is it won't. But yeah, so a couple of people in the chat room are asking, are you on is the network password protected? And if it is, just try turning that off to see if it's the encryption that's causing the problem. Like I said, I've seen this before. I've seen it with Apple branded routers with Apple hardware, and it's always been on the 2.4 gigahertz N connections. I'm not sure there's a magic answer, but my guess is that it's a software issue on your computer, and there's something you've either installed or a setting you've changed that was similar to whatever Jeff installed or changed down in Austin that causes this issue. And I don't know what it is. We sort of scratched our heads over it down there quite a bit. But try it without encryption.
I will try that, and I will also mention that there's a new iMac. The same black and black and aluminum iMac that I tried with the 802.11n, and it had the same kind of issue.
Interesting.
So
okay.
I wonder if it's, and as far as I can tell, it's a pristine iMac, but it's another one here in the office.
Right.
So I'll try it without the security, though.
Yeah, try it without security. And if you can't get it to work, at least in our experience with the similar situation, setting the router to G completely solved the problem forever. So
Yeah, that's what's all here in, right now before I ask you the question. So
got it.
I may just leave it at that.
Okay. Yeah, right. Yeah. Even my guess is unless you're really far away from the router, even at G speeds, you're still going to get full the full benefit of the Comcast connection.
Right. I'm literally right underneath the router, so it shouldn't be an issue.
Gotcha. Well, if you're right underneath it, maybe you drop an Ethernet cable and be done with the mess.
I don't want to connect with Ethernet.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's a laptop.
It's easier to, bring the laptop around.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Michael. And hey, if we could all have a big, round of group love here for Michael. No, man, he spends a lot of time and we do, our best to compensate him for his efforts. But he does put his heart and soul into converting these shows. And I know I really appreciate it. And my guess is the listeners actually appreciate it even more. So thank you very much.
Absolutely.
I love doing it and helping you guys out because you really got you got me started with all this internet journalism and Macworld and all this stuff. So
Michael started out as a listener to this podcast, of course, and many others. But he pinged me. I was at my desk for some reason. I was at my desk at like 2 a.m. on like a, maybe it was a Monday night after we'd recorded the show.
I think you were at a conference.
No, I was here. I was here in my office. I remember where I was. And for some reason I had iChat open and Michael found me and pinged me and said, how come you don't do the AAC thing anymore? And I said, well, I don't have time. And it's the end of that story, but yeah, it was very cool that it sort of worked out that way. And then of course you started iPhone Alley and now you get the big bucks. So there you go.
And let's not forget that you hooked me up with Macworld passes that year too.
Oh,
well,
that's right.
I gotta fondly remember, Michael. I think you remember, but you were a young guy and you were asking, how to navigate the show and whether you could get to Steve or anybody. And I'm like, what? Go for it. Didn't.
But you told me to
try
jump
it, but you did it, man. You got as close as any of us have, I think. You just kind of waltzed up there and it's like, hey, Steve, how's it going? Well, I don't think you got really close, but I think you got to talk to Jonathan and a few others, right?
Yeah, I said, I asked Steve to sign my iPod and he said, find me later. And I did talk to Jonathan Ives for a little while and he played with the iPod, but he wouldn't sign it because he didn't, he said that, he wasn't the only one who worked on it.
But that was awesome. I didn't think you'd do it, but you did. Okay. Thank you, Michael.
Somebody's asking the date that the first Geek Gab was released, and I am trying to figure out if I have that anywhere here. It's June of 05, off the top of my head, I can't remember it. And I know it's not easy to find on the web, though it's still out there. If somebody looks in the MP3 feed, it will be there. It's obviously all the way at the bottom. So, yeah, anyway. All right. Should we take another question? Is there another question in the room? So, yeah, the way this works is if you click request to talk, that'll just like Lou just did. All right.
Welcome in, Lou. Hello, Lou.
Okay, I've got it. Yeah, I've got a couple of questions concerning time capsule. You hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you. Yeah, yep.
Okay. The first question, because you've talked about this before, when you're backing up several Macs to a time capsule, you were addressing the issue of running out of space by minimizing the size of the sparse images. Would it be easier or just as good, or can you not do it, to partition the time capsule disk basing the partition size on the relative size of the drives that you're backing up and just assign each Mac to one of those partitions?
Yeah, okay.
Is that doable?
I saw that question because, so going back a bit, I guess the default behavior of, just for those that refresh the thread here. The default behavior is when it creates the sparse image, it takes up the maximum size of the partition. And I guess that makes normally multiple machine backups difficult. What you can do is reset or make a sparse image take up less space than the default, which is everything. And then that helps manage it a bit, but there's still an issue of, what if you exceed that? So I remember seeing that suggestion, Lou. You know, it sounds like it should work. I mean, what do you think?
Well,
I know that
on my plug-in hard drive, I've got it partitioned for two different Macs, but I have to plug each one into it to be able to let the time machine work. And the other question is, and this is going to sound really dumb, but will an Airport Express with a drive of my choice plugged into it function the same as a time capsule?
Say that again.
No, I got it, Dave.
Okay.
Well, it's the second part of the question. I think you were asking, and I remember your email, Lou. But Airport Express.
I'm in Airport Extreme. Excuse me.
Airport Extreme. I'm sorry. Same. Yeah, I think. Airport Extreme plus USB drive versus time capsule, Dave. Remember we.
Yeah, actually, that's, strangely enough, Alexander's question that we were going to answer. So let's answer the first half of this.
I'm sorry. Okay. So we got multiple questions about the same topic.
Yeah,
okay,
that's right.
I didn't have it in front of me, but...
Okay, so the first part of the question, can you part... You know, does it make sense to partition the drive? It does. Now, partitioning the time capsule's drive is something that is not necessarily the easiest thing to do. But it is possible, and it makes perfect sense to do that. But with the caveat that when you partition a drive, you kind of have to know in advance how much space you want to use. And that may or may not be the decision you make on day one may not be the decision you're happy with down the road. So that would be my big concern. I've got five machines backing up to a 1 terabyte time capsule here, and you know they do fine. I did do some management of the sparse bundles. Time machine sort of took that over anyway, but it's been working fine. So I wouldn't necessarily do it. I think you're okay with what you're doing. You're just letting it go. But that's. I don't know. What do you think, John?
Well, that kind of reaffirms my fist shake a lot of times, or just, you know, as I think you probably know if you've listened for a while, I tend to not like partitioning drives exactly for the reason you just brought up, Dave. You never know when things will change in the future. Though I think, if you need to, I guess the thing is, it's relatively easier to resize the images than it is the partitions. Though you can resize partitions, and I think even do recovery. I haven't experimented a lot with this, but I believe that's something you can do now, right? You can resize a partition, non-destructive resize.
You can. That's right. As long as the disk is connected directly to your Mac. Again, you know, partitioning the time capsule starts to get a little funky, but for a disk that's connected to your Mac, as long as it's HFS or HFS Plus rather, with Leopard and presumably later. You can resize with the disk utility, certainly with the command line, and I think even with the thing. I'm in a fog here tonight, John. You know, I've had this cold, and I took some meds for it. And
nice. So,
yeah, it's good. No, it's great. It's fun. Excellent. All right, so now let's answer the second half of Lou's question, which is the entirety of Alexander's question that we did not even play, yet we prepped. So, and I believe the question, if you translated it to me correctly, John, is that what's the point in buying a time capsule for, you know, $500 for a 1 terabyte model versus buying an Airport Extreme for 180 and like $100 for a USB 2 terabyte drive that's hanging off of it. And I think that's the net
that
of
is the of, gist.
Okay. All right. So go.
As to why you would. Well, the initial thought is, gee, why am I paying all this money? And actually, it may be faster, a time capsule, because instead of USB, it may be. And I don't know about this. I was going to look for a time capsule, you know, take apart thing. But I would suspect that it's not a USB bus, that it's directly connected. So in theory, I think you could be going faster. But then, as you pointed out, Dave, a drive connected to an airport is something called AirDisk. AirDisk, the last I checked, is not officially supported for Time Machine use.
In fact, officially, it's unsupported for Time Machine use, and you have to type a magic little incantation at the terminal in order to get Time Machine to even acknowledge it as a potential destination for backups. Now, I've heard multiple reports. Pete, I think you actually do air disk.
I do.
For Time Machine. And, yeah, would you in short, would you recommend it? And in long, why or why not?
In short, yes. In long, no. It worked well at first. It's gotten boggy. As you've seen at one point, I had, 500 gigs backed up. And it got to the point where now I deleted it. And now I'm having some issues with my southbound traffic from my Drobo, which is my air disk, back down to my computer. So once I sort that out, I think I'll be back up and running. It's a great way to go. It's worked really well, but I wouldn't recommend it as a solo solution. I use Super Duper and make a bootable disk and keep that separate, and then I use Time Machine as my other backup for air disk. So a multi-layered approach.
Okay, normally when John gets booted off the call... John,
I got booted off of the... No, I got booted off of TalkShoe.
Ah, okay. I was going to say, nothing looks like you got booted. Okay. All right. So there's some advice. Yeah, there's some wackiness with the way Time Capsule works, or Time Machine works. And Time Capsule sort of accounts for that in the whole setup. And apparently the Airport Extreme does not. So, yeah, I think... Frankly, I think... Time Machine is great, but one of the big problems with it is you don't get any real notification if there's problems. Usually it takes, even to get any notification, often takes 10 days. You know, you've got to have a problem for a backup not happening for 10 days in order for that thing to you know, pop up and even begin to notify you. Now, you can look in the logs and see the problems, but it's not enough for what should be a, you know, fail-safe backup solution. You just don't know if you're having problems. So,
I'm not going to advertise it as that because
no, it's not. Yeah. I use it as my first line of defense. But like Pete, I use Super Duper once a day to clone my boot drive. Do I use Super Duper? Yeah, I guess I use Super Duper. John, you use Carbon Copy Cloner, right?
Yes, yeah. Need to do that.
And that, you know, I check that probably once every week or so just to make sure it's working, and it's always fine. And if there is a problem, I get a notification immediately, you know, when I get to my desk the next day. So,
yeah. And as far as the alerts, now I think I told you about this, but my buddy Josh was having problems where it would just come up with an error saying, "Oh, I can't do a backup, sorry." And I'm like, "Well, check the console." He once I told him how to filter the console on I think it was Backup D, which is the Time Machine process. Right. It came up oddly with a spotlight error because I guess somehow spotlight is somehow grafted that. Into that. And so I want to mention it quickly. Just to your point that sometimes it warns you and you don't know what the heck was going on. In his case, by nuking the spotlight index and re-indexing, all of a sudden Time Machine worked. It's like, huh? But yeah. Okay. Next, is there someone saying Jeff is Jeff waiting?
Yeah, we've actually got Jeff Gamet waiting, but I do want to talk about our first sponsor for this show because it is the sponsors that provide us the funds that help keep us going here. And the great part is every single one of our sponsors has fantastic products. So it's a pleasure to be able to talk about them during each show. Sponsor for today is Audio Engine, AudioEngineUSA.com. Today, I wanted to talk about the Audio Engine W1 or the AW1 Premium Wireless Audio Adapter. This is a USB audio solution. So you plug this into your Mac and then it wirelessly transmits the audio from your Mac to a little receiver that plugs into, say, your stereo or your wireless speakers or really anything that can take an a two-channel audio input. The magic is these guys have done this in a way that there is no noticeable latency whatsoever. So you can actually have a movie going on your Mac and hear the audio out of the speakers and everything is in sync. Now, obviously, it's not perfectly in sync. That would be impossible. But it's in sync enough to where at least any human I've ever showed it to cannot tell that there's any lag whatsoever. And I certainly can't. And I'm a picky SOB when it comes to this stuff. And when my TiVo gets out of sync, I stop everything and I restart it because I just can't stand it when there's even the slightest delay. So that's $149 from AudioEngineUSA.com for the W1. Now they have the W2 as well, which is the same concept, but instead of it being a USB connector that pulls the audio out of your computer, it's a dock connector that pulls the audio from your iPod or, of course, your iPhone. And this makes it really cool because you can have your iPhone or even your iPod, and now it becomes a wireless music transmitter, or you could even think of it as a wireless music remote, right? So if you've got, your wireless speakers or even your stereo speakers somewhere else, they don't have to be wireless, but they're wireless from your iPhone or iPod. You go in, you click play, you can adjust the volume, you can change tracks, you can change to a different playlist, and you just cart the iPod or iPhone around with you, and you can totally change things without having to run back over to the stereo. Now, that's $169. Both are available, AudioEngineUSA.com. Check them out. If you do happen to buy some stuff, let us let them know that you heard about it from here, because we certainly appreciate them being a sponsor, and they certainly appreciate hearing about the stuff you folks like. So, okay. We are going to move on to, we said we were going to move on to Jeff Gamet. So if Jeff is still there, let's bring him up.
He's live.
Hi, Jeff.
Holy crap. I'm unmuted.
Hey, watch the mouth.
Oh, sorry. I forgot this is a family show.
Yeah. That's not right. Like yours, right? Jeff, does a couple of podcasts, right, Jeff?
I do a couple podcasts, but we'll get to that in a minute. The more important thing right now is that you guys do a podcast, and you deserve a hearty round of congratulations for making it all the way to 200.
Thanks. We've clawed and scratched our way here. It's grueling each week, Jeff, but we...
I second that. I mean, you've worked with Dave. I mean, come on.
Wait a minute.
Oh.
Sorry. All right. So did you have a question, sir, or are you just slacking off during work hours here?
You know me. I'm slacking off during work hours.
Excellent.
I don't have a question. No, I'm actually going easy on you guys this evening because, well, it's your 200th episode, and I figure that you both had a wee nip to celebrate already, so... I really need to make it easy on you.
All right. Well, then thank you, Jeff. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Gamet, managing editor for MacObserver.com, co-host of the Apple Weekly Report that we do, and he joins Michael Johnston, who was the first caller that we had on his iPhone Alley podcast regularly. So regularly, he might even be considered a co-host of that, but I don't want to apply labels that I don't know apply. So...
Well, I'll leave that up to Michael to decide who gets called what.
That's right. Yeah, if anybody's going to call anybody names, we'll leave it up to him. All right.
That's right.
So, hi, Dad. My dad is listening in from one town over here in Dover, New Hampshire, and he asked how long John and I have been friends. Now, he probably knows the answer to this better than anyone, but John, we talked about this 100 shows ago exactly. But I believe you and I met when I was 14 or 15. You were 20. So, and you are actually, happy birthday, John. As of last Thursday, you are now, can I say how old you are, John?
Age is no longer the answer to the question.
That's right.
And a few of my followers actually got that. So.
That's right. So you're 43 now. So John, you and I, you were 20 when we met. You called.
So was okay because I thought it was high school, but I think the thing was I started my BBS in high school, but then this is when I was doing my initial undergrad work.
Right, that's right. And your board, John ran a bulletin board, and then he kind of you went offline for a little while, and then you came back online, and it was
there was a little problem with the the law.
Right. Mm-hmm. So when your board came back online, I had actually started my bulletin board by then, but I signed up for yours, and you called me to voice validate, and that's when we met, And so you were 20. So if you're 43 now, the answer is 23 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. I think I say this regularly, but you are the oldest friend, not the oldest. Well, maybe the oldest. The friend I've known the longest that I still keep in touch with. So
likewise.
And, yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I don't know. You tell me. Yeah. So. Yeah. Cool. And that was sort of the, you know, one of the driving reasons we started doing this podcast was to, I knew I was leaving New Hampshire, or leaving Connecticut and moving up here to New Hampshire. And it was a good way to force us to keep hanging out, even if it's virtually, which seems to work all right.
Well, I think we concluded that. I mean, we pretty much kept in touch on a regular basis every couple of weeks anyways.
Yeah.
And at one point, I think either you or I suggested, I'm like, you know, we kind of talk about geeky stuff anyways on a semi-regular basis. So why don't we just record it and see what happens? And I
had become a big fan of podcasts at that point anyway, driving back and forth from Connecticut to New Hampshire as we were getting ready to move up here. And, you know, I'm an audio geek and had all the equipment. So Here we are. All right.
I still got to say just one thing to thank all the listeners. But when I go to iTunes podcast technology and I see that we're somewhere there usually along with some of our other podcasts, but I'm just humbled. Because you don't get there unless you got a really good supportive user community. And I think we have that. You know, we I love the style of the show that we do. We're kind of laid back. I think we don't claim to know everything because nobody does. And we try to engage people. And I think we've kind of hit upon a good formula. So, again, thanks to everybody, because it's just so cool to see us up there.
All right. So we have a blind question from Washington here. And I don't know if Washington is a name, a state, or perhaps another designation, but I believe you are live, Washington. So hello.
Hey, I'm in Washington State. I'm on the phone. So that's interesting. It comes up that way. This is Steve in Seattle. I've called a few times. Congratulations on the podcast.
Thanks.
Been great. So here's my story. I'm using Vine server. It crashes periodically. And there's a command line to restart it. But I'd like to add that script to the cron, have it done once a day. So how do I run a script from the cron in macOS 10?
Okay. So this is truly a blind question.
I have in the back of my mind, there is a utility that makes it very easy to just schedule things. I don't know if you have to go down to a shell script for a cron, but
I would use launchd. I would skip cron and use launchd, which can be controlled with a little piece of software called Lingon. And
that's the one I think.
Yeah. There is a way to control cron, but I believe in many ways, cron is like being pushed towards deprecation, right? I mean, it's never going to really go away. It's part of Unix. You know, there's no way you're going to get rid of it.
I focused on web servers, so that's why I thought of that.
Right. Yeah. No, I totally know what you mean. On the server that runs TMO and, you know, all the stuff we have for Backbeat, cron is, without it, we'd be dead in the water, or we'd have to work 24/7 to keep everything, you know, the way we want.
Yeah, I'm looking, Dave, and the description of Lingon seems to cover this, is that it allows you to, create scheduled events and stuff through scripts. So I think that's probably the best way to do it.
I'll check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. So check out Lingon. You know what? I will, I'll find you a link here, although I'm sure a Google.
Well, I got
search.
It here right in front of me. So, let's
go ahead and paste it into the chat.
Yeah. Duh.
Yeah. There we go. Oh, yeah, we got tons of it out there. Did I paste the wrong thing in? No, I guess
we both got the right thing. So
somebody else put a SourceForge link, which is the one I usually use. Okay, so somebody asked, Pierre asked, so thank you very much, Steve. That's that's an excellent question. And what Lingon lets you do is it lets you manage, for those who don't know, cron and launchd. Actually, I'll start with cron because I'm not going to say they're exactly the same. Cron is a service that runs on most Unixes and monitors
Unixes.
Unixes.
Yeah. Is that the correct?
I believe it is. I think it's Unixes.
Unix. Okay, go.
Okay. So cron runs on Unixes and it monitors what are called cron tabs or little files that describe time down to the minute when a certain task is supposed to be run. So you can say, okay, at, you know, 2 a.m. every day, I want it to restart my web server, or every 5 minutes, I want it to go and run this other little script. And that's all it does. You have to kind of manage the scripts on your own. You have to build them or use, you know, built-in scripts or what have you. But that's what it's for. Lingon does the same thing, but more. Lingon, in addition to monitoring by time, can also be triggered by certain system events and Launch D can be triggered by certain system events and other things. And Lingon is a GUI program or a graphical program that lets you manage that. So without getting overly geeky, though, I'm sure we've crossed the line. That's what those do. So excellent.
It's what we do. We cross the line.
We cross the line.
Now, interestingly enough, a lot of times, if you go into Activity Monitor and you click on a lot of things, they will show LaunchD as their source, because they LaunchD pretty much, as you said, Dave, kicks it all off.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's the core of pretty much everything if you look at, you know, what. Yeah, like here, just for example, so I see a little snitch network monitor. Huh. Okay. Double click on that. Parent process, LaunchD.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So, yeah, LaunchD, as far as Mac OS 10 is concerned, Leopard is concerned, it manages everything. That was a big change from Tiger to Leopard, is that we started relying on LaunchD a whole lot more. So there you go.
Okay, what's next? More.
All right, yeah.
Unpredictable,
you know what, Pete?
Live action.
Go.
All right.
That's right.
Apple Geek 95.
Apple Geek. Are you there?
Okay. Hi. Can you hear me?
We can.
We can hear you
okay.
Now.
Okay. I'm calling. I have a time machine problem. Time machine itself is working great, and I've successfully restored a few times from my backups. But when I go to the time machine, either in the preferences or in the menu bar, it shows nothing for the latest backup. So it just kind of annoys me that, you know, it shows latest backup, but it won't show when that was.
So it says latest backup colon and then nothing after it. Is that right?
Yeah, it just says two hyphens. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think I know why that happens. Can I?
Yeah, man, you go.
Well, is this a portable machine?
Yes, it's a laptop.
Okay. Based on what I've seen, I've noticed this behavior too, is that I believe the time machine volume has to be mounted for that to be known, and that may not always happen, because I've noticed that as well. I mean, I'm looking at my desktop right now and it's there, and I'm looking at my laptop and I'm going to bet you it's not there, because I think typically that volume is normally not mounted. Yes, I'm looking at my portable and there are all lines through it. So the only thing I see is the next backup time, but I do not see a lot of other entries here.
Yeah, well, the two, I have it partitioned into two sections, and they're both mounted on the desktop at the moment, and it still doesn't show the latest backup.
Okay, all right, then that's not right. Okay, I don't know if you got some, well, you said it's partitioned. I don't know why that would make a difference, but to me, that's expected behavior with the, at least with a wireless connection, because the volume has to be there somehow for it to grab that time, so.
I have an idea that I don't know why this is happening, but what happens if you first enter Time Machine, right? Where, you know, you go up to the menu or hit the little button or hit the little icon in the dock and go in and let it kind of, you know, look through the drive to the point where you could restore things. You don't have to, but just get it to the point where, you know, the stars are floating and you've got the 3D view, and then cancel out and then look and see what it says. I wonder if, because it's a laptop, you know, maybe when it's on battery power or something, maybe there's some other indicator that the machine uses to decide whether or not to go and fetch that information. And by forcing it to fetch it, then maybe you'll get the answer. I don't know.
Let me see. No, it's still not showing it.
Normally, when we do this, we get to throw out this great advice, and there's no instant feedback, so we sound like geniuses, right? Because we have what we presume, or at least we present, to be the answer.
I think what I'd do the next time is cut off the caller, so we don't hear.
Sorry, my thumb wasn't fast enough.
I thought I got that one, too. Well.
You know what? So something to do is go into console and search for backup D and see if there's anything that appears that gives you an error or an indication that, that either Time Machine has successfully completed or if there was some error.
Right. So. Console backup D as we...
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So...
Oh, well, there is some team, and that's from a few hours ago, but it says, like, exited abnormally, but I don't know, maybe the computer got put to sleep or something, but that doesn't make sense that it would be probably now, because it's dated from 3 hours ago.
Well, let me jump in with that. Remember what I did with mine, and it was over the network, is use something to keep that connection open then. Which I used the sling box for mine in particular, and there's bound to be some other. Got your computer working on something else, it can't go to sleep when it's trying to do a backup of Time Machine. And maybe
right.
That'll help.
Maybe overnight, plug it in so that it's powered up. With the power adapter, go into Energy Saver, set it not to sleep, and then before you go to bed, tell it to run a Time Machine backup and just let it go through and. And in the morning, check that console log to make sure that that you're getting that that backup. Otherwise, you might need to start from scratch and blow away the disk image if it if it gets to the point where you simply can't get a completed backup.
Yeah. So. Well, it's connected directly via USB.
Right. Right. So, yeah. No, I'm just concerned that there might be something going on, perhaps with the sparse image that's out there, or actually it wouldn't be a sparse image. It would just be the file system that's out there causing those issues. So, yeah.
Yeah. I do keep other things on the same drive. So it might be, the sparse image is thinking there's more space than it is or.
Yeah, that could be, although it should see that. I would try and, get everything out of the way and force that backup and shoot us an email, and this is actually a great opportunity to talk about contact info and how to reach us. So, John, the phone, when you're not on TalkShoe, how is it that people reach us?
I pick up the phone, cell or wired or otherwise, and call 206-666-GEEK, which is, Dave?
4335. And you can email feedback@macgeekgab.com. And, ladies and gentlemen,
Dave fixed it.
You would never guess that this could happen, but Skype now works. Yeah, so I was the idiot, actually.
That was a little accounting error, right?
It wasn't an error. So what happens is when you call Skype, it forwards it to our 206-666-GEEK number. And the reason I have it do that is because that way... It emails us when the voicemail comes in and it's all in the spot that we normally check and we don't have to go out of our way to check Skype. Well, in order to do that, of course, we burn what they call Skype out minutes. And we had burned them all the way down to the point where we had like 5 cents left in the account. And of course, it's not going to call out when there's no money left. So once I stumbled onto that and pumped the account full of money again, magically it started working. So you can Skype to Mac Geek Gab, and I believe it works. We actually had many people test it this week, so I think we're all right on that one. All right, did we get all that? We got all that. Okay. How are we doing on time here? We have been at this 43 minutes. Okay.
Yep, they're having fun.
I know. All right. Let's do. Are there okay, John? Before we dive into the without a net stuff here, is there anything in the pre-prepped questions that we need to get? Actually, there is. There's something in the pre-prepped questions.
What do you think?
Allison was kind enough to send in this.
Hey, Dave and John, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silica Gas Podcast, hosted over at podfeet.com. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to you to congratulate you on your 200th episode. But I also wanted to point out to the listeners that they need to understand that there is nothing better to clean grout by than the Mac Geek Gab. I mean, you start hearing about GUID things and they're in the, digging into all those details and stuff. You really got to concentrate on what they're saying. So if you're cleaning grout, it turns out you can pay perfect attention to what they're saying. I give my thumbs up recommendation to the Mac Geek Gab for all your grout cleaning needs.
I just couldn't let the show go without without sharing that with all of you.
I just put her on a list.
You put her on a list. I'm not sure what
it's
list
one I hadn't yet started, but she's on it now.
Oh, okay. So Brent's saying we need to listen to her 200th show, and I will make sure to do that. Yeah, Gene, Allison is funny. All right. Are there any other questions in our little list there, John, that you just have to feel like we have to get to today? You know, I think it's probably worth reading Tom's. We can save that till the next.
I was thinking about David is kind of straightforward, but.
All right. Yeah, well, let's do an email. I'll read the email. That's fine. All right. So we'll do this and then we'll take two more questions and then we'll see where we are. And, you know, eventually we have to wrap this up. So I should say, though, as far as celebrations go, as far as parties go, show number 100 was less work than this one. Not that there was actually a whole lot more prep. I had to figure out what kind of computers I had all throughout my life. But as far as answering questions, we got to be on our toes here tonight, John. It's fun, though. It's good. All right. So David writes, I'm having a lot of fan action. Well, that happens to rock stars. Oh, no, wait. Or at least it sounds like the fan. This is new. It'll go on for quite a while. I'm not sure what has changed to cause this. I installed temperature monitor to see if it was just running hot. The problem with that is it only gives you the temperature, not whether or not it exceeds normal operations. So I don't know what to do with the info it's giving me. Any ideas? I'll throw this one to you first, John.
And I have a great idea. Go to www.intelmactemp.com. You want to know what other people are getting for temperatures? Some of it's there. Now, unfortunately, they show it in this odd thing called centigrade or Celsius.
Yeah.
But the tools can do that. So so one suggestion is to go there. And I think I'll have to dig around in my bag of tricks. But I think there are some programs that will actually take the temperature and then submit it to a database and kind of give you also a feel for the retired low. But the other thing that I would check out, because from what David said, he hears the fans come up, is to get a utility. Now, the one that I have used and you may use also is a dashboard widget called iStat or iStat Pro. I guess they have a couple of them, but that will, among other things, show the fan speed. I don't know if you have any favorites for showing the fan speed.
I don't obsess over it a whole lot, but I've never had a situation crop up where the fan has been an issue for me. But yeah, iStat would be the thing I'd use. One thing I'll point out.
You go. SMC fan control. I see someone suggested that.
Yeah.
So, and Thermograph is a good utility. So, but I would combine the two. If you see both the temp and the fan, I mean, when the fan comes on, that indicates to you somebody started, you know, making me generate too much heat, and I better turn on. So by looking at both those figures, I think you may be able to zero in on the process. Plus something like our pal menu meters. I mean, check your processor. Because to me, typically, your processor utilization, although there are many temperature sensors, if your processor is pegged at 100% for each core, then your fan's going to come on.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up, John, because that was where I was going to go with this is, okay, the fans are running when before they were not. Now it could simply be, you know, I don't know what area of the country David is in. Of course I could look it up, but I'm sure it says right here. So he's in California in Santa Monica. So it's probably fairly consistent temperatures for him year round. I don't know. Certainly more consistent than we have here. I know that in the summer, there's one FireWire drive I have I need to watch out for, because if the temperature in the room creeps above 80, that drive will shut down. It could be a temperature thing. It could be, you know, you've got a different setup at your desk or something like that. But it could also be that you've got some app on there that's running constantly and pegging the CPU, which, as John, you said, heats things up. And then that causes the fans to burn. Or it could be a graphics thing. And you wouldn't necessarily see that in the CPU. So because that could be the graphics chip. So, definitely worth thinking of that.
And I'd also, because I think several folks use this and I do as well. But let me bring it up here. Do I have it running? Yes, I do. Thermograph X. And the nice thing about that is that it has, and as you may or may not know, like, for example, in my, you know, G5, I'm just looking here as an example, it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, count them, 7 temperature sensors. And they're not all CPU. Drive bay, Backside, I think that's for, I forget what that is. Heatsink for another connect. Sometimes the names of these are kind of weird. Here we go. MLB inlet, main logic board. But the thing is, the heat may not be, depending on what you're running, if it's a portable, then it's almost certainly the processor or the GPU. A lot of times they have different temperature sensors for the processor and the graphics unit. So I guess another, to peel the onion a bit, another level of detail is look at the temperature sensor for each device. Like maybe somebody's whomping on your drive. In that case, the drive heats up if it's a desktop and the drive fan comes on. Right?
Yep. That's right. Because
usually you have a fan. Usually there's a, I think for the most part, there's a one-to-one between fans and temperature sensors. Sometimes there may be one fan for two sensors that are in a general area. But yeah, I don't think it's always one-to-one, but.
Yep.
Okay. And actually we're getting readings here. So a lot of people are saying that their temperatures, I guess they see them in the 100 degree range seems to be normal.
I think
for
it
processor temp.
I think it really depends on the type of computer.
Yes.
So yeah, I wouldn't.
Well,
take
looking right now. So my
statement.
All right, my MacBook Pro right now is running at 131 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
I just happen to have that as I have that in my menu bar just because I'm interested.
And that, so anyways, and that's, and my 50, desktop that's 55 is, degrees centigrade. By the way.
Yeah, and then my desktop is running, for the most part, the hottest part of this, which is the heatsink for the processor, is running at 143 degrees Fahrenheit. So, but yeah, check the database we talked about. Look at each of the temperature sensors and check the fan speed, and you should be able to figure it out if you use discipline to kind of map all those.
There you go. All right, so we have two more questions in the room, and I think that is perfect timing. So, Kirshen, I think I'm saying your name right, but whoa, hello.
Hey, it's John and Dave. It's Kirshen here from Cedar Rapids. Am I okay?
Oh, yeah. Yes, hello.
Hey, yeah, I was chatting with a friend the other day about his Logitech mouse, and he tells me that he doesn't get a good acceleration curve with it. Is there any utility that you know of that lets you tweak the acceleration curve?
You know, I don't know. The first thing to do would be to install the Logitech software, MouseWorks is the name of the Kensington software. I think it's the Logitech Control Center.
I think I heard of that one.
Yeah. So, so, AMC podcast in the room is saying to check out USB Overdrive, but,
I got that on my Power Mac and I was suggesting that for him as well. Yeah. I use it because I have a Logitech, a Nano VX mouse. And I love that little tiny mouse, and USB Overdrive works with all the buttons. I certainly will tell them about that.
Yeah. So I would say for you know, first step, install the Logitech Control Center, because that might give your friend what they're looking for. If not, then
okay.
then try USB Overdrive and go from there. So thanks for thanks
very
for asking. Cool.
Hey, thanks. Congrats on the 200th, and hope to hear more from you all. Keep in touch.
You got it.
Thanks.
Cool. All right. One. I think we have one left. Is that right, Pete?
Aaron Miller. Yes.
Aaron. All right. Cool. And I believe you are live.
Hey, guys. Congratulations on getting to show 200, first things first.
Thanks.
Sounding good.
So I'd email you guys, but I'm planning on digitizing my family's LPs this summer using a USB Iterall sound card. And I was wondering if you guys had any recommendations on software that is free or close to free that I could use to split tracks and do any leveling that needs to happen.
The only thing I know of that does that is Toast from Sonic/Roxio, and of course that's not free. I'm wondering if anybody in the room here will chime in. Somebody says Audacity will split
that's
tracks.
That's what it is. I was thinking of that. Audacity is a very nice free program, and I think it's pretty full featured. I don't know if it. I would think it would get down to the level of being able to spit out channels. I'm almost positive. I haven't used it in quite a while, but that's a good free alternative.
Yeah,
I'm dabbled with that.
Okay, yeah. I do know that, and I realize, you know, budgets are what they are, but I do know that Toast has ways of splitting out the tracks that work fairly well. Somebody says that Audacity is it. and audio slicer is the other recommendation. So,
okay. The other thing is, I know you guys are using Audio Hijack Pro, and then there's a product from them called Fission.
Yep.
And I don't know if either of you had used that at all.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, Fission is for editing. Isn't that for editing MP3s? Isn't that right? Or am I getting there? It will let you edit MP3 files without having to reconvert them, which is actually magic, right? An MP3 file is a converted audio, and so it has it's not just a stream of audio all the way through necessarily. The whole file is a package, and the folks at Rogue Amoeba had figured out how to allow you to cut that up without having to resample the whole thing. But I don't, unless you've already saved the album to MP3, I'm not sure that Fission is what you're looking for. So,
okay. But for splitting things up, would that work nicely?
Yeah, it does. It works great. And again, the beauty of that is you don't lose any quality, even if the audio is already compressed.
Okay.
Cool.
All right. All right. Thanks so much, guys.
Yeah, our pleasure. Thanks for calling in.
All right.
Yep.
Cool. Can I give a big shout out to Pilot Pete here? He has been managing the queue and taking my hand signals, which of course we didn't pre-prep or anything, and totally getting it. I mean, it's like, I'll tell you, this is like being on stage, and you know, I've worked with a couple of sound engineers on stage where I'll be playing and I'll think, gosh, I need to hear the guitar just a little bit louder, and I just look at the sound man. And I've had this happen once or twice where the sound man just knows what I want and it magically happens. And so this has been an experience very much like that, where, you know, we're here, we're live. We don't really know what to expect from the calls that are coming in. And Pete has been managing this perfectly. So it's a Pilot thing. That's right.
It's all hand signals. You know,
you can't
hear each other. You talk to your ground crew through hand signals.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Cool. Yeah. Well, you know, I was saying that before too, Pete, is that you and Kershaw, I guess you're both pilots, and when I started seeing you two chat with each other, I'm like, now I know how it feels when I talk computer to people, and they kind of look at me like, kind of, huh?
Yeah.
Is it some of your pilot jargon just kind of...
Yeah. What do you say?
It's like computer speak. I mean, some of it I get, the acronyms, but some of it I'm like, what?
Well, if it makes you feel any better, we don't understand it either, but it looks cool.
Hey, wait a minute. That's our secret here with the geek stuff. All right. Yeah. So I saw somebody posting Twitter stuff in the room. We might as well chat about that. So Pilot Pete is twitter.com/PilotPete. John, you are twitter.com/JohnFBraun. Is that right?
That is correct. And Dave Hamilton, I believe, is.
That's me. Dave Hamilton.
Dave Hamilton.
That's right.
Okay. We're all who we are.
We're all who we are. Yeah. Okay. I think we're good.
Where's the band? You bring the band?
The band's always here, man. Right? I hope everybody can hear that. Before, I tried to play a song during the thing. Yeah, everybody can hear it. All right.
Oh, yeah. Matt Geek App Twitter. So I am hooked in. You are hooked in, Dave.
Yep.
We will usually indicate which one of us is posting something, but, you know.
That's right. you could check, because if I'm posting to the Matt Geekab Twitter account and I don't identify myself, the other way to check is I'm always on my iPhone, I'm always using Twittilator, and on my Mac, I'm always using Tweety now, which is a fantastic Twitter client for the Mac, and it's freely available.
Tweety? Really?
Oh, it's great.
You know, I'm still, after all this time, you know, being a Twitter veteran, I still like Twirl. It has enough of things that I like, Dave.
The problem with it is it's Adobe Air, and I've never met an Adobe Air app that I didn't hate.
They get around it. I mean, I tried, like, TweetDeck. The thing that ruined TweetDeck for me was... You can't change the column width. I need that. I'm sorry. I cannot accept any application where I cannot change the column width. So that in my book. But Twirl lets me change the size of the window. And it has a background search, spell check, TwitPick, searching for... It does what I need for now.
Tweety's much better on the Mac. But I have
yeah, well,
to say,
that's your you know,
no, this
ill-informed
is
ill-informed opinion.
I'm just sharing facts. That's all I do. But on the iPhone, you know, what? I tried Tweety on the Mac and finally
Twit
thought
phone I like.
And I finally thought, you know, I should try Tweety on the iPhone. So I ponied up and I bought it. And there's a couple of things about the UI that are slightly better than Twitilator. But overall, man, Twitilator Pro is way better on the iPhone. And the next version that's coming out...
No, Twit Phone. I like Twit Phone. I think you turned me
Twitter
on to
phone,
that. Or I tried
you mean? Yeah, Twitter for phone. A free Twitter client,
F-O-N.
Twitter Phone is great. Yeah.
Yeah, well, here we go. Well, Mark Shepard, he's got the right idea. He uses Twirl, so Mark's right. I got someone else out there. But...
Hi, Mark. All right.
Just saying, you know?
Yeah, where are we here? Okay, so we have a couple of things to go through. So, of course, we have CashFly, which will provide all of the bandwidth, except, of course, for the TalkShoe stuff, and TalkShoe seem to work great. So, CashFly hosting at CashFly.com, the podcast marketplace, and I wanted to thank all our sponsors. I know I said before it's great, but you know, we got to 200 shows here, and our sponsors are certainly no small part of that. Of course, the W1 and the W2 from Audio Engine, BB Edit 9 from Barebone Software, PDF Pen, Text Expander, Disc Label, all that great stuff from Smile on My Mac, Notebook from Circus Ponies. Thank you all. This is, you know, you folks make great apps, and it is our pleasure to talk about them each week. And, of course, all that is made possible through the Backbeat Media Podcast Network. Mm-hmm. And I think that's we get to wrap this one up here, John.
I'm amazed. 82. I see guest 82. We got up to 82.
Oh, I was wondering how you were counting these. I would love to know how many people are logged into TalkShoot at any one time, but I don't think we can tell that.
A bunch. No.
A bunch, yeah. Many pages worth. Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been great.
And we'll do it soon.
That's right.
300.
Gentlemen, just wanted to say that was a fantastic live show. This is Barry from Chicago. Dave and John, great job and congratulations on number 200. Here's to another 200. John, happy belated birthday. And you guys, don't get caught.
Hey, John, Dave, and Pilot Pete. It's Leandro here from the UK. Congratulations on your 200th episode. What a milestone. Hopefully, here's yet to another 200 episodes. Thank you so much for your effort, time, and for 4 years of the Mac Geek Gab. As always, keep up the great work, and don't get caught.
Maynard.